Hello, everyone. Welcome back to We Don't Sit on Couches the podcast. I am your host, Christina Wade, the creator of WeDon'tSitOnCouches.com. Thank you so much for joining me again today. So today I have with me Deidra Mathis. She is truly a Renaissance woman. Hi, Deidra. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great. Good. So Deidra, she is a self-published author. She has a book called Wanderlust for the Young Broke Professional. I love that title. She is also a blogger. She has a travel blog. She travels the world. And she is also preparing to open up a hostel here in the United States in Houston called Wanderlust Hostel. So we have a lot to talk about today, Deidra. Thank you so much for being with me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me where you're from, where you went to school, all that good stuff.
Okay, well, born and raised in Jacksonville, Florida, so a native Floridian. Graduated from undergrad at Florida A&M University, and then I went on to earn my master's at BU State University. So I am a two-time HBCU graduate. So
yeah, HBCU.
Absolutely. So I love my HBCUs. And the first time I ever, you know, traveled abroad and even, you know, found out what a passport was when I was in college. I was a sophomore in college, and I had an opportunity to do a study abroad trip to the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was very excited, very nervous, scared, anxious, all of those emotions in one. And when I traveled there for that week, I literally got bit by the travel bug. I thought that was something that only affluent people got or something, you know, people who didn't look like me got. But when I went to the DR, I was bitten by the travel bug, and then ever since then, you know, I've just been traveling the world and just been really fortunate and happy to be able to have so many opportunities to see so much that I've seen so far.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I also did a study abroad, and I just think that's such a great way to see the world for the first time, right, to study abroad. I really think that's awesome. I really wish that more, you know, students had the opportunity to do that, especially minority students. I feel like we don't always have the opportunity to do that. So I think that's great. So tell me, you took a gap year?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was, picture this, living in D.C. I was 26 years old. I had what some people call a quote-unquote good government job, you know, making more than my parents were making in my early 20s. So by anybody's standards, I was doing very well. And I mean, life was good. Life was great. But I knew that I wanted to do something more. At that time, I had already lived in South Korea for about 7 months. I was teaching English over there. Had did a summer abroad in India, and had a few other countries under my belt. And I just knew that I wanted to explore more of the world. I knew that when I earned my master's, I didn't want to go back into the workforce. I knew that I needed to take a break, because people laugh when I say this, but from 6 to 26, I was in school. So 2 decades of my life I spent in school. So I just needed a break. So when I graduated, I took all of, you know, my savings, everything I had in my bank account, and I started my gap year. So I started off in Australia, traveled to South Africa, Thailand, Bali, Fiji, just travel, you know, that part of the world. And it was literally the best thing that I've ever done in my life. The scariest, most stressful decision I've ever made. But then again, the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah. So how many different countries did you go to during that year?
So that year I did 13 countries. Well, 12 to 13 countries. And I spent less than $12,000 doing so, which a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? And, you know, hostels played a big part of that. And we'll talk about hosteling a little bit later. But
yeah,
just, you know, being very budget conscious, and, you know, just being wise with my money, I was able to stretch it out for a full year and some months. So I say gap year, but it actually lasted for about 14 months. So I was very blessed to be able to have that experience.
Wow. So then after your gap year was over and you came back to the States, did you immediately feel like you wanted to leave again, or were you like, okay, I'm back in the States now, I can chill out a little bit? So what was that about? What happened there?
Well, you know, no, when I got back, I had that experience, and I knew that I wanted to at least get some type of work experience here in the States. So my story is a little, I tell people, you know, I'm such a go-with-the-flow person. I'm such a planner. To a T. I carry a planner everywhere I go. I'm documenting everything, you know, as it happens. So I'm a super duper planner, but then again, I'm a go with the flow person. So when I got back from my gap year, I was applying for jobs. At that point, I was back home in Florida figuring out where I wanted to go. I love D.C., but I didn't love the cost of living in D.C., so I knew I probably wasn't going to go back there. So really, the world was my oyster. I could just go anywhere. And so I actually went up to a conference that summer in San Diego. I went to an international educators conference, and I was talking to a woman and telling her about my experience, telling her what I had just got done, you know, doing, told her about my book. I mean, she was just super impressed, and she offered me a job at a study abroad company. So that was something that I couldn't have even mapped out. So people always find it amusing when I say I came home from a gap year to find a job in travel that allowed me to travel for the next 2 years.
Wow.
So I was just really blessed. So I worked for that study abroad company for 2 years and got to go to Abu Dhabi, China, a few other countries. That was just an amazing experience. And so I worked there up until December of last year, and I decided to focus on my hostel full-time. So, I mean, I've just been really, I don't want to say lucky because it has nothing to do with luck. I've been just extremely blessed and in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned your hospital, but before we talk about that, I want to talk about your book, Wanderlust for the Young Broke Professional. So when exactly did you write this book? What was the thing that made you say, I need to write a book? And how did that whole process work?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I had a bucket list. So I had a list of items that I wanted to accomplish before a certain point of my life. And writing a book was one of them. So I have my undergrad degree in journalism, and I have a master's in communication, but I'm not really a big fan of writing. And so anybody who knows me, I love doing things that that aren't particularly strengths of mine, because it helps me get better at it, and it helps me overcome a fear. And frankly, to be honest, I was afraid, you know, writing the book is essentially letting the world be, you know, exposed to your inner thoughts and your feelings and everything else. So I thought I was going to write a book and maybe sell one or two copies to my best friends and then, you know, pick the book up.
Yeah.
But everyone just was encouraging me to write the book. I mean, you should write a book. Oh, my gosh, this is so cool. This is so awesome. You know, how are you doing this? How did you do this? I mean, I just had so many questions flying at me every day. And one day, you know, I said, you know what? Everyone's right. You know, I should write a book. So I literally took all my notes and, you know, all the ideas and all the, you know, planning and everything that I needed to plan a successful gap year, I put in this book. So last February of 2015, Wanderlust for the Young Broke Professional was officially released, and it just did extremely well. So it was covered in the USA Today. It was covered Black Enterprise Magazine. I got asked to speak at conferences all over the world. You know, last year I sold at least minimum 1,000 copies, which for a self-publisher, that is amazing.
Yeah.
I was asked to appear on about 7 different news programs as a travel budget expert. So, I mean, when the book came out, life just kind of just flew in a whole other direction. It was just such an amazing experience. So,
wow.
You know, I'm just really pleased, and I'm really happy with the outcome of that book.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think one of the most popular questions that I get, and you know, you've gotten the same question, is how can you afford to travel so much? And I think people are really afraid of the word budget. Like nobody likes that word. People want to have their Starbucks and their shoes and their bags and their trip to Italy too. And it's like, well, you might not be able to have all of those things. Like you have to decide what's most important to you. So when it comes to financing travel, what is like the top thing, like the number one thing that you tell people that they have to do when it comes to financing their travel?
This is what I tell people. And when I spoke at a few conferences last year, this is what I told my audience when I spoke. I do something called the envelope trick. And it's not really a trick. It's just a skill that I learned a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much we waste money every day doing things that we don't even think about. And you just mentioned Starbucks. You know, whether it's going and buying an icy, a smoothie, you're stopping to a fast food restaurant 2 or 3 times a day. You're making small purchases throughout the day, and you're not really realizing how much it adds up. So literally for a few years ago, I said, you know, every time I buy something, I'm going to track it. And what I discovered is I was throwing away $100, $120 every week on foolishness, going out to eat, snacks, just, you know, just doing random activities that I really didn't need to do. And so I said, what, imagine what I could do if I took that 120 per week that I'm wasting and just put it in the envelope. So I did that for about 7-8 months, and I had about $1,100 in the envelope.
Nice.
I'm like, wow, this is money that I literally would have thrown away on nothing. And so I just became a beast at just saving a certain percentage of money and putting it in an envelope and just realizing, literally asking yourself, okay, do I want this or do I need this? And would I rather be in another country spending this money than here? So just, I told you, you have to get in the mentality of, like, budgeting. You just have to budget. You have to, you know, put aside the money. You have to find a destination that's within your, you know, means. You have to travel according to the way you can travel, not the next person. So everyone wants to do the Dubai and they want to do the 4 or 5-star hotels, but you might have to go to Dubai and stay in a hostel. I mean,
that's
just the way I think. So that's what I do. I don't have any magic tricks. I don't have any special remedies or any, I don't have any of that. I have a lot of practical advice that has worked for me. I plan trips for other people. It has worked for them. And so I will continue to live by these, you know, strategies, you know, for the rest of my travel life.
Sounds good. Sounds good. I love it. So you said the magic word, hostel.
Yes.
So I have stayed at a lot of hostels in my, during, you know, during my travels. And whenever I tell people, oh, yeah, I'm going to stay in a hostel, and I stayed in a hostel, people get this look like it's like the most terrifying thing that they've ever heard in their lives. I think a hostel, you know, it's very popular in Europe, but I feel like Americans, they just don't understand the concept of a hostel. So tell me, do you always stay in hostels, or like, is that your preferred kind of accommodation, or do you just find that you like it because it's cheaper, or, you know, what is that about?
Well, first of all, let me say, I know that look that you're describing because I've gotten that look more times than I would like. Let me tell you how I first, you know, discovered or found out what a hostel was. I was actually living in South Korea, and I was living in Busan, South Korea, which is the southern part of Korea. And a few of my friends wanted to go up to Seoul for the weekend. So Seoul is a big flourishing city. I mean, very similar to New York City. So no one can just decide 1 or 2 days before that they want to go stay in the heart of Manhattan without paying an arm and a leg.
Right.
So it's sort of that same type of situation in Korea. So, you know, we were looking for hotels. We couldn't find anything. And so a friend suggested, you know, well, how about we stay in this hostel? And I had no idea what it was, and she tried to describe it, but I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, it's $50-something a night. Sure, come on, let's go for it. So I went to the hostel, and when I found out, you know, I had to share a bedroom and share my accommodations, I was freaked out. I was like, you want me to have my personal belongings? You want me to sleep, you know, in this room with people I don't know? Oh, my gosh, this is ridiculous. When I tell you, by the third day staying in that hostel, you just totally, all your inhibitions are just gone.
Yeah.
It's totally safe. You have lockers to put your stuff away. You're surrounded around other people who are just like you, young people who are traveling, young people who are on a budget, young people who just want to go out and see the world. I mean, most hostels, locals cannot stay there. So you're not going to go in an environment where, you know, you have somebody from the city there. There's going to be people from other cities, other states, other countries there. Everyone just comes with the same ideology that they just want to see the world and they want to meet other people while they do it.
Yeah.
And so that was the first hostel experience I had. And I quickly, you know, during my gap year, I stayed in tons, more than I can count. At this point, probably I've stayed in more than 45 hostels. They are just the most efficient, cost-friendly, safe, you know, options that a person could ever have. And when people ask, you know, what should I do to make sure I'm safe in hostels, I tell people, number one, bring a lock. You know, if that will make you feel comfortable, bring a lock, put all your valuables in the lock, lock it up, take the key. I tell people, bring your shower shoes. If you don't feel comfortable, you know, showering in a public place, bring shower shoes. You know, if you prefer to have a private room, there are many hostels that have private rooms. So you're sleeping in a room by yourself, but you still have that hostel feel. So there's so many hostel, you know, options for, you know, people to choose from. And I hate, there's a movie, I guess, that came out a few years ago called Hostel, which is a scary movie.
And I think died or something.
Yeah, some people died or got, well, I will not watch the movie. I've only heard about it. But I tell people all the time, please, guys, open your minds up a little bit more. That is not what a hostel is. You're totally going to be safe. I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I knew I wanted to have a business in the travel industry, in the travel hospitality industry. And so 2 years ago, I decided, you know what? I'm going to have a place where people can come and feel at home, where people can travel on a budget, where people can feel safe, where they can get the true culture of being in Houston. Mm-hmm. And I decided to do a domestic hostel initially because I want to get more Americans excited and happy about hosteling. Mm-hmm. I mean, I eventually plan to open up a second one in South Africa a few years down the road. But I'm just really excited. I mean, just being an advocate, being a minority woman in this industry, there's very few of us. The only African-American hostel owners I've ever met are in Europe, and that's in Amsterdam and in the Philippines. That's it.
Wow.
So to come here and be slated to be one of the first, you know, female African-American hostel owners is just amazing feeling, and I just cannot wait till the doors open.
That's awesome. When are you planning to open?
So we're slated to open next summer. So we have a little less than a year before, you know, we're going to be open for business.
Okay. And do you have, like, a location, a specific, do you have a building already, or how is that process working?
So I'm in Houston, which right now is a seller's market, which can be a good and a bad thing. So if you find something you like, you have to hop on it then and there, or within a few hours it could be gone. So what I've decided, because I'm actually going to New Zealand for a few months, I'm going to be doing a hostel apprenticeship there. So essentially, I'll be helping this guy run his hostel. So I'll be running the front desk. I'll be changing the linens. I'll be organizing people's trips. I'll be doing everything to, you know, get all the things I need to do before coming back to Houston and opening up. So when I get back, I know the area we will be in. It will be right on the metro line. So when people come to Houston, they don't have to worry about getting a rental. They can just get a ride from the airport to the hostel, and then all the transportation is right there in the city, the center of the city. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a location that's going to be less than a 10-minute walk away from the metro, which is going to be a great part of town to be in. So, yeah, I'm just really excited about it.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. You're like Renaissance woman, like, I'm
so business
holder, world traveler. I'm like,
dang,
like,
Deidre. I mean, life is short. At the end of the day, if none of this works out, and if I am a total failure, I can look back on my life and say, at least I tried. And that's more than what half of people I know do. They don't even try. So, I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm not doing anything special. I appreciate when people say nice and kind things about me. I mean, of course, I mean, I love to hear that. But at the end of the day, I'm not doing anything, you know, I'm not doing anything that the next person couldn't do. So
right.
I always just tell people, whatever it is that you're just passionate about, you owe it to yourself to at least try. I mean, there's no harm in trying. If you fail, at least you tried. But if you don't try at all, you will never know what could have been.
Absolutely. You'll never know. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah. I love that. So before we go, tell me, I'm going to ask you a few of those annoying questions that people ask
sure.
all the time.
What's
your favorite country? If you can pick like one, which I can never pick one. So if you have to give me three, that's fine. But what are your like top three destinations?
I tell people when they ask me this question, that's like asking a parent to tell me who their favorite child is.
Exactly.
It's so difficult because you like each child for a different reason. You love them the same, but you like them for different reasons. But number one, South Africa. Okay. South Africa, Cape Town specifically, was just a country where I went there originally for 7 days, loved it so much, extended my stay by a few other extra days, which is something I've never done in the country. Just beautiful, clean, people are nice, food amazing, the culture is just phenomenal. Beach is mm-hmm. fantastic, which is why, you know, I will choose Cape Town or somewhere in South Africa to be where I open the second location of my hostel. So mm-hmm. there, definitely. Number two, I'm a really big snorkeler. Mm-hmm. Everywhere I go, I must get in the water and I must snorkel. So for that reason, I'll say Fiji. Mm-hmm. Fiji has the best water known to man, in my opinion, for any water activities, for snorkeling, diving, scuba diving, all of those things was just fantastic in Fiji. So I'll say Fiji. And then last but not least, I really like Thailand.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with Thai foods. I'm obsessed with the $2 massages. I'm obsessed with the nightlife and just everything about Thailand. It has a little bit of everything. I love elephants, so I love that I can go to Chiang Mai and be surrounded around elephants that are, you know, being taken care of and not abused. I love that I can go to Phi Phi Island and be on the ocean. I love that I can go to Bangkok and be in the city. So that country has just a little bit of everything for me. So those would be the top three if I had to say my favorite. And I know you asked for one and I gave three. But
that's fine. That's fine. Actually, Thailand is also one of my favorite places. It's beautiful and it's bustling and there's so much culture and there's so much. And those
Absolutely.
massages that are like $10.
Yes.
They're like the best thing
ever, like, you will never have a better massage than a massage
never.
In Thailand. And also,
people don't understand.
Yeah, they're awesome. Like, they're really awesome.
Right.
And I'm also going to South Africa for the first time at the end of the year, so I'm really I have a lot of you know, South Africans, as you know, from The Lion King and South African friends. So I'm like, I'm finally getting to go. I'm so excited.
Oh my gosh,
so,
I can't wait to hear your experience.
Oh my
gosh.
I'm so excited. I can't wait. So well, thank you so much for talking to me. It's always a pleasure. Let
Absolutely.
People know, where can they get your book?
You can get my book a few different ways. If you want a signed copy, which I suggest you do, you can simply go to my website, which is www.wanderlustybp, and that's WANDERLUSTY as in young, B as in broke, P as in professional.com, and go to the buy the book link and order it through PayPal, and I will send you a signed copy in less than a week, so you'll have it very
quickly. Nice.
Or if you feel more comfortable ordering it through Amazon or through Author House, feel free to go on there. I have about 30 book reviews, so you can see what people think about the book. Very simple, easy read, 101 pages, just straight to the point. That
nice.
Can I travel for cheap? Right there. So that's how you can order the book.
Okay, so that's wanderlustybp.com to get your signed copy, or you can go through Amazon.
Love it.
Or Author House.
Yes.
Nice. Okay. And then your blog is passportsandpizzazzblog.wordpress.com.
Yes, so right. Passports and Pizzazz, every time I travel, I update it, so I just went to Belize last week, so, you know, if you want some quick and easy tips on how to maneuver around Belize, you know, go check out passportsandpizzazz.com.
And then your hostel, Wanderlust Hostel, where can people get more information about that?
So Wanderlust, the name of the hostel is Wanderlust Houston, a Texas hostel,
okay.
And the website will be up for that in about 60 days. So in about 2 months, people can, you know, log on the website. It's going to be www.wanderlusthouston.com, and you can go on there. It's going to be a countdown. It will be open. It's going to, you know, give a little bit of information about me, the owner, a little bit of information about how the hostel, you know, got started. So that'll be up in 2 months, and that will be www.wanderlusthouston.com.
Okay, sounds great. That's awesome.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Deidre. I'm so excited for you. I can't wait to see, you know, what happens with the hostel. I'm definitely going to come to visit once you open.
Yeah,
absolutely. Want to go to Africa. I'm very excited about that. So thank you once again for joining the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And as always, folks, you can check me out at WeDon'tSitOnCouches.com. You can subscribe to the blog. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can share it with your friends. You can also send me messages and questions if you have any questions or anything that you want to talk to me about. Feel free to do that. And remember, fear is stupid. And all things live, love, goes to be. We don't sit on couches. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
On the Sands Radio Network.